Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Addiction and Recovery for Dummies, Second Edition, by Paul Ritvo, narrated by Asa Siegel. Publisher's Note: In this audio edition, you will hear references to tables present in the print and e-book formats of the book. Limit of Liability / Disclaimer of Warranty. While the publisher and authors have used their best efforts in preparing this work, they make no representations or warranties with respect to the accuracy or completeness of the contents of this work, and specifically disclaim all warranties, including without limitation any implied warranties of merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose. No warranty may be created or extended by sales representatives, written sales materials, or promotional statements for this work. The fact that an organization, website, or product is referred to in this work as a citation and/or potential source of further information does not mean that the publisher and authors endorse the information or services the organization, website, or product may provide, or recommendations it may make. This work is sold with the understanding that the publisher is not engaged in rendering professional services. The advice and strategies contained herein may not be suitable for your situation. You should consult with a specialist where appropriate. Further, readers should be aware that websites listed in this work may have changed or disappeared between when this work was written and when it is read. Neither the publisher nor authors shall be liable for any loss of profit or any other commercial damages, including but not limited to special, incidental, consequential, or other damages. Introduction. You've likely started this book because of addiction troubles, either your own or those of someone you care about. It's immediately important to know that no one is singly responsible for these troubles. We live in an addiction-inducing society. A lot of money is made from addictions. When more people become addicted, more money is made. Despite this, addictions are more treatable now, and the scientific support for such treatments and for what you can do for yourself or for a loved one is more powerful and reliable than ever before. You may often hear people say that they're battling an addiction. Addiction is a life and death battle. There's no compromise with addiction. People with addictions are either becoming less addicted or getting more addicted. But there is another analogy to consider. A journey through life where loving people support those with addiction is finding a natural life path, a path that is increasingly free of addictions. First, it's important to destigmatize addiction. Addiction is unfortunately associated with technological progress. As technology progresses, newly developed substances powerfully target pleasure centers in the brain, mostly to ease the pain in those severely ill. As a result, substances have been created that are more accessible, tempting, and frequently used than before. With more technological development, addictive behaviors may increase during the 21st century, and they've already reached alarming levels. Therefore, we scientists, caregivers, and people with addictions must work together to use evidence-based methods to free ourselves from the powerful effects of society, technology, marketing, and the very human drive to consume. Second, it is important to remember that recovery is an inner journey, and people with addiction often feel alone. In their aloneness, they ache and yearn for healthier states of mind and body. To recover, people with addiction must find inner strength and often need help in doing so. This book can help those with addiction rediscover and feed inner strengths and recover, so they can reclaim the joys of life as healthy human beings. About this book. This book is written for two audiences. It is first and foremost written for people seeking freedom from addiction. You may still be deciding whether you need help and whether you really want to be free from your addiction. You may have already tried to overcome addiction and failed, perhaps many times. But now, you can effectively do it. Yes, you can. In this book, I inform you of all the effective available options. This book addresses them in language you can understand and with references that take you to the scientific core of reliable knowledge. It helps you determine how big a problem your addictive behavior is. It helps you assess your readiness for treatment and which treatment you're ready for. It describes all the evidence-based professional and self-help treatment approaches, including pharmacotherapies and detoxification treatments, psychological outpatient treatments and residential treatments, different types of self-help and their likelihood of truly helping, treatment programs based on the Alcoholics Anonymous 12-step model. This book is also written for family and friends of addicted people. In my experience, the family is often first to seek help for a loved one's addiction. This book guides family members in considering treatment options. It provides information and direction on how to communicate with the family member whose addiction worries you. It also provides support and guidance in helping family members ensure their own needs are not neglected despite the desperate needs of the addicted relative. The book includes specific information for teens and adults and addresses substance addictions such as drugs and alcohol and behavioral addictions such as gambling and sex. It is organized into 5 parts and 20 chapters. Chapter titles and chapter subheadings let you know who the particular chapter or section is addressing. I use a minimum of professional and medical jargon. When jargon or medical terminology is used, I highlight and define the terms and mark them as technical stuff. I incorporate many case studies of individuals as illustrations. The identities of these people are carefully disguised to protect confidentiality. In many instances, an individual's story represents a composite of experiences with multiple clients. When these case examples are used to embellish a point and aren't central to the information or guidance discussed, the story is highlighted in a sidebar. Sometimes the case examples are part of a point I'm trying to make. In those cases, you find them in the regular body text. You should consider the sidebars as extra material that you don't have to read if you don't want to. There is no need to read the chapters in order. Instead, start with the chapter that is of most interest to you at the moment, nor do you need to read the entire book. This is a reference guide on how to recover successfully. You need only refer to the chapters relevant to your needs. But of course, if you want to read the whole book, that's best. Accordingly, start with the chapters of most interest. Most chapters assume that the primary audience is the person struggling with an addiction. However, some chapters are specifically written for the families of addicted persons. Foolish assumptions. I assume that if you are still reading this introduction, you are struggling with an addiction yourself and want to learn more about how to be free from your addiction. Or you are a family member or friend of an addicted person and are searching for help. If either of these descriptions fits, this book is written for you. Icons used in this book. Throughout this book, I will verbalize icons to quickly identify different types of information. Here are the icons I use and a brief description of their meaning. Tip. As the name implies, the tip icon alerts you to pieces of practical information or things you can do to handle your addiction problem. Remember, The Remember icon highlights information I don't want you to forget. Technical stuff. The Technical Stuff icon is used to indicate that the information in the paragraph is of a technical nature, and you need not read it unless you want to find out more about the professional and scientific aspects of addictions. Warning. The Warning icon alerts you to things you should avoid. It is also used to highlight cautionary points about addictions. Case Study. This icon highlights case studies of individuals experiencing addiction, either themselves or when helping a loved one. These case studies are often set as sidebars to the main text. Beyond the book. For some helpful information about how to recognize addiction in yourself or a loved one, and some practical approaches to treatment and recovery, check out the cheat sheet for this book by visiting dummies.com and entering the book's title in the search field. Where to go from here? You are not alone in what you're confronting. A lot of people are facing the same problems right now. You don't deserve to be stigmatized in any way. We are currently experiencing a pandemic of addiction. Whether you accept one or another of the evidence-based theories about why this is true, your main concern is, and should be, to get healthier and less inclined to sip, inject, smoke, and otherwise ingest poison. That is much easier said than done. My writing of this book humbly reflects the gap between being informed and doing what you know is right. Whatever you do, whether it's during the next 5 minutes, 5 days, or 5 months, that's the hard part. When you read, please know that all that's written humbly acknowledges the hard part. Not only can addiction or dependence on a substance or a behavior, which seemed harmless, ruin life, we live in an indulgent time where too many try to take the easy way out. There's no easy way out of addiction, nor toward healthy states of mind and body. Yet it doesn't have to be purposely hard to get healthy, and part of the difficulty is selecting the steps by which meaningful progress is accomplished. That is what this book is about. To find and do the next step of leaving addiction behind and welcoming health. You can go straight to whatever chapter is of most interest to you right now. If you are seriously considering treatment, I suggest you review Part 3 to get informed about the treatment options available to you. I also want to draw your attention to Chapter 7 because it helps you get a full understanding of the factors you must address to free yourself from your addiction. Now, to get started. Against great odds, humans succeed with great achievements. You can recover. And with the help outlined in this book, I will help as much as I can. 1. The Hole in the Heart, Detecting Addiction. In this part, I help you detect the signs of addiction and determine whether you or someone else is addicted. I provide surprising facts about how common addiction is and about the many forms it takes. I especially focus on substance addictions, such as drugs and alcohol, and behavioral addictions, such as gambling, sex, and eating. One of the challenges is knowing whether your use of a substance or reliance on a behavior is a problem. In this part, I explain the differences among use, abuse, and dependence. I also discuss how costly addictions are to you personally and to your family. Chapter 1. Addiction. What is it? In this chapter, looking at use, abuse, and addiction, understanding your personal risk of addiction, reviewing treatment options, stepping onto the road to recovery. Congratulations on picking up this book and leafing through it. Even if you just read these few words and no further, remember that you are on a path. just by choosing to pick up this book means you are seeking to find a non-addictive path for yourself or for someone you love. It could be a path that will lead to a rediscovery of your inner strength and inner peace. Yes, you have probably had highs that feel so good it's hard to describe them, but they are not sustainable in the way you elicited them. You have to find a non-addictive path to getting high and find a gratifying way of living. You may think you have already found one and that all you have to do is tone things down a bit, but it's hard to tone down a poisoning. Poisons destroy in both small doses and in large doses. Addiction is the poison of everyday life in the 21st century. Why is that true? Addiction robs you of freedom and control. You may think you choose to use and can choose to use less, but just try to stop. See if it's possible. See whether you have control over the addictive substance or behavior you're afflicted with. If you find you do, great. Abstain for a while. Be sure you have the control you think you have. If you don't have control, if abstaining is unthinkable or impossible, read on. In this chapter, I tell you about the different forms of addictions, emphasizing substance addictions and behavioral addictions. I tell you about how the medical community views addiction and how your personal view, when it's all said and done, is what you'll likely follow. I also provide a brief overview of what the rest of this book provides. I designed this book to help you understand where you are right now in your control over addictions. This understanding can help you find your path to freedom and well-being, and resume true control of your life. Defining substance use, abuse, and addiction. You may hear a number of addiction-related terms, and it can be confusing as to what exactly they mean. The less confusion around these terms, the better. The clearer your understanding, the more you know about how to get and make use of the help available. Understanding what addiction is. In 1964, the World Health Organization, WHO, suggested replacing the term addiction with the word dependence for describing the feeling that, mentally and physically, you must use a substance. Your brain and body yearn for it. Remember, in this book, addiction refers to a combined mental-physical dependence where you're irresistibly compelled to use a substance or behave a certain way. Using the substance or engaging in that behavior is so compelling that even knowing you may face considerable harm does not stop you from doing it. You're addicted when you no longer direct yourself out of harm's way. You're addicted when you use substances or engage in behaviors that put you in harm's way. Simply put, addiction causes a fundamental change in your brain, a change that scientists and clinicians are trying hard to understand. But even though this change is mysterious and powerful, when it occurs, certain urges become irresistible. You become so compelled that nothing else matters. It doesn't matter how smart you are, how accomplished, or how physically strong. It's well proven that addiction can happen to virtually anyone. Mental dependence. Mental dependence refers to associations that develop in your mind between events, called triggers, and emotional and physical urges to use the substance or do the behavior. The triggers are memory traces that are, in turn, set off by other stimuli. They exert a powerful influence on behavior. Moreover, they're not just in your mind. Through a series of chain reactions, they induce biochemical changes throughout the body. What is the difference between mental and physical dependence when both cause fundamental chemical changes? The main difference is that the chemical changes brought on by mental dependence are due to mental associations. Simply put, just thinking about getting high changes your chemistry and affects your whole body biochemically so that physical excitement is felt and is compelling. Physical dependence. Physical dependence, on the other hand, doesn't require any thinking at all. It's simply related to the physical addictive effects on multiple brain chemicals called neurotransmitters. The brain adjusts and tries to tolerate the drug. Then you don't feel normal or good unless you take the substance. Physical dependence describes your brain's physical adaptation. As explained in Chapter 10, you can detoxify your brain, get rid of poisonous chemicals. You can clear out a physical dependence relatively quickly, several days. However, your mental dependence can last a lifetime. Much of this book is about reducing mental dependence. My goal is to help you direct yourself away from the disaster and cause the mental imprint to fade. If you are successful, the imprint fades so completely that you may wonder why you didn't start a new and better life sooner. For more of the differences between mental and physical dependence, see Chapter 5. The difference between abuse and dependence. The difference between abuse and dependence is a matter of time and degree. Essentially, dependence is associated with tolerance, you need more and more substance to feel the same high, and withdrawal symptoms. You experience substance-specific withdrawal symptoms when you stop using. And abuse is associated with a single or continued substance use despite harmful health, social, and financial consequences. The medical criteria for substance dependence and substance abuse are summarized in the following sections. Medical criteria for substance dependence. From the medical perspective, dependence is defined as experiencing at least three of the following criteria within a 12-month period. You experience tolerance to the substance, which is defined as a need for markedly increased amounts to achieve the desired effect, or there's a markedly diminished effect with continued use of the same amount. You experience withdrawal, as evidenced by a withdrawal syndrome for the substance or when medications prescribed to relieve withdrawal symptoms are discontinued. You've taken the substance in larger amounts or over a longer duration than initially intended. You've made unsuccessful attempts to cut down or control substance use. A great deal of time and activities is spent obtaining the substance, preoccupation with how and when you will get your next fix. You neglect or abandon important social, occupational, or recreational activities because of use. Your substance use continues despite knowledge that there are persistent or recurrent problems related to your use. Medical criteria for substance abuse. The medical definition of abuse is experiencing one or more of the following criteria within a 12-month period. Your recurrent use of the substance results in a failure to fulfill major role obligations at work, home, or school. You use the substance in situations where it's physically hazardous, for instance, while driving a car. You have recurrent substance-related legal problems. You continue to use the substance despite persistent or recurrent social or interpersonal problems caused or worsened by use, for instance, arguments with your spouse about the consequences of your use. Non-substance or behavioral addictions. Non-substance or behavioral addictions are behaviors you engage in that meet many of the same criteria as substance addictions. The behaviors dominate your life. You feel compelled to do them. Examples are pathological gambling and sex addiction. when the medical criteria outlined in the preceding two sections are applied to behavioral addictions, the definitions become less clear. You can readily see how a behavioral addiction meets criteria for abuse, such as pathological gambling. But the dependence criteria don't apply as readily with addictions like workaholism, overeating, and excessive sex. Still, tolerance builds up with behavioral addictions. You need to do more and more of the activity or engage in more and more risk in relation to the activity to get the same high. For more on behavioral addictions, see Chapter 3. Your personal definition of addiction. Regardless of all criteria, you know if you have a substance or behavioral addiction. You know it because the actions involved in getting the substance or doing the behavior dominate your life. You may not want to reveal what you know to anyone else, but it's difficult or impossible to hide it from yourself. Sometimes the line between heavy use and abuse or dependence gets fuzzy. The case examples of Joe and Mark in the following sections may help you find more clarity about yourself. Case study. Is Joe abusing marijuana? Joe smoked marijuana every day. His first joint was in the morning. Smoking was his way of approaching the day in a mellow frame of mind. Joe was in his third year of college. He'd started smoking marijuana at the end of his sophomore year. He enjoyed college and felt in no hurry to finish, partly because he was still uncertain about what he wanted to do after college. At least, this is how he rationalized taking half the course load he should have been taking in his third year. At this rate, it would take him twice the normal time to complete college. Joe supplemented his income from a student loan by working as an assistant in the college library on Saturdays and Sundays. He tried getting other jobs, but found that the hours of work conflicted too much with his recreation time. Other than paying for a steady supply of marijuana, he figured he had few financial needs. The student loan paid for tuition and rent. He even had money left over to sustain a pretty simple diet of bread, peanut butter, jam, and an occasional hamburger. The money he made at his part-time job on the weekends financed his drug habit. Joe was a bit of a loner. He only had a few friends to get together with on Saturday nights. They often went to a bar to play pool and drink beer, and, of course, smoke a joint or two. During the weekday evenings, Joe kept to himself. He rented a room in a house near campus. The other rooms were also rented out to students, but Joe didn't socialize with roommates. What he most liked to do in the evenings was smoke marijuana and listen to music. He rarely got to bed before 2 a.m. Is Joe abusing marijuana? Case study. Is Mark abusing marijuana? Mark's situation was very similar to Joe's. Like Joe, Mark smoked marijuana daily, and Mark was also at college. However, unlike Joe, Mark was very outgoing and sociable. He started smoking marijuana at parties. He met his girlfriend at one party. He and his friends usually socialized as a group, sometimes partying at the local dance club and sometimes getting together at fraternity houses. Mark lived at home, so he seldom had the opportunity to host these parties himself. He worked on the weekends, but because his living expenses were low, he could use most of his earnings to buy marijuana. By his third year, smoking marijuana had become a daily habit. Mark's room was in the basement of his parents' house, and so he could sometimes smoke at home without being detected. However, most of the time, he had a few joints in the evenings when he went out with his buddies. His girlfriend sometimes joined in, but increasingly she complained that she was tired of the parties. They had been fighting a lot lately because she wanted them to branch out and do a variety of activities. Mark didn't want to fight, but he also didn't want to cut back on seeing his buddies and smoking marijuana. Mark started to experience problems at college in his third year. He rarely got home before 1 a.m., so getting up in the morning became a big problem. He couldn't keep up with the full course load and dropped two classes.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?